low resistance in the fallout.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Good morning from American Public Media in Los Angeles. I'm Steve Chiotakis. It's the morning open, less than a half an hour into the trading day, and there are lots of aches and pains. Remember those bank stress tests at the White House? The Wall Street Journal this morning reports Bank of America and Citigroup, two of the nation's biggest banks, may need to raise more capital. So, where's Wall Street? Dow is down about 0.7% at this hour, 57 points. S&P 500 and the NASDAQ both down about 0.8%. European shares down 2 to 3% so far, and Asian markets closed mostly lower as well. Let's check in with Julie Niemann, analyst at Smith Moore & Company. She's joining us live from St. Louis this morning. Hi, Julie.
Good morning.
Thanks for being with us. So with B of A and Citi supposedly needing more capital, how much reason for concern is this given how enormous these banks are?
Well, the Fed was very quick to say that. Now, this doesn't mean that they're going insolvent. The banks just have to keep a bigger capital cushion just in case the economy doesn't recover at all. Well, there's a given because the losses are going to continue. Housing is still going down. We haven't heard a thud there yet. Change in charge cards continuing to go bad. Consumer loans defaulting at record rates. And now commercial real estate is heading down at a very alarming rate. So the need for that capital cushion is going to be very big. And somehow the biggest banks are going to have to boost their capital positions by offering new stock or whatever means they devise. And this is what the real big problem is going to be for all of these 19 banks. Who's going to give them the money?
Yeah, I'm looking at shares this morning. B of A down about 7.5%. Citibank down about 5.5%. So in this environment with the fallout going on, Julie, are investors wary about the prospect of raising all this cash?
Very wary, simply because can you really trust what their financial releases? And it's been a problem for a long time. There's no disclosure there, very little visibility. We have to trust what management is saying about the condition of the banks, and oh, there's a winning formula.
And quickly, you know, swine flu having an effect on the markets too, right?
Well, you see investors coming in every day wondering what the disaster du jour is. Yesterday, it definitely was swine flu, and today, too. The drug makers went up. Oil went down. If the recession wasn't enough to keep people home, they're absolutely certain nobody is going to go with swine flu, so the price of oil is going down. Pork producers down.
Julie Niemann, thanks for joining us, analyst at Smith Moore & Company. We appreciate it.
You bet.
All right. Just a couple of days till a government-imposed Chrysler deadline. It has to get its financial house in order. Our Uncle Sam stops the gravy train. If a partnership with Fiat goes through, Chrysler will get access to small car technology. But what does Fiat get? Here's Marketplace's Jeremy Hobson.
Fiat's been absent from the U.S. for two decades. Nobody wanted to buy their cars. But, says Dave Sedgwick of Automotive News,
these days they're making cars that are much more stylish and much higher quality.
To sell those cars in the U.S., though, Fiat needs a dealer network, and that's what Chrysler would give them. Lula Tafe is the former president of Ford's European operations.
Fiat now primarily is a European player and primarily an Italian player.
Latafe's now the dean of Boston University's School of Management. Whether Fiat sells its own cars here or slaps a Chrysler logo on them first, he says the nationwide network is what's important.
Long term, most global auto manufacturers want a presence in North America because this is the largest single automotive market in the world at this point.
But don't expect Fiat fever to hit the U.S. right away. Dave Sedgwick says it could take 2 years for the company to get its products into Chrysler showrooms. In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson for Marketplace.
From the not-as-bad-as-it-could-be file, this morning we got word that, yes, the Case-Shiller Home Price Index fell in February, but for the first time in 16 months, it wasn't a record drop. You're listening to The Morning Report on Tuesday, April 28, 2009, at Marketplace.org. The U.S. Supreme Court today hears arguments in a case over who has the right to enforce state anti-discrimination laws against national banks. Now, state governments argue national banks, like all businesses inside their jurisdiction, are subject to state enforcement. Federal bank regulators say they have the exclusive right to police nationally chartered banks. Marketplace's John Dimsdale reports the case could decide who will be the cop on the financial beat.
When New York's attorney general asked several national banks to explain why they were charging blacks and Hispanics higher interest rates, the feds told him to back off. They said those banks shouldn't have to worry about 50 different regulators. Gregory Taylor is associate general counsel with the American Bankers Association.
A patchwork of state laws could limit things as product offerings, increase operating expense, reduce efficiency within which banks do their business.
But states say federal regulators aren't enforcing state laws against banks that sell fraudulent products or discriminate. Eric Halperin with the Center for Responsible Lending filed a brief supporting the state's right to police their own laws. He believes the current bank crisis gives his argument teeth.
There's no better example of what happens when we have a lack of law enforcement than what we've experienced over the last couple of years.
No matter how the court rules, congressional reformers want states to have more authority to enforce state consumer protection laws. In Washington, I'm John Dimsdale for Marketplace.
U.S. officials are meeting in Switzerland to hammer out a new tax treaty that will shed more light on Americans who hid their fortunes from Uncle Sam in Swiss bank accounts. But the Swiss aren't willing to give up their secrets for nothing. Christopher Worth has more.
In exchange for lifting bank secrecy laws, the Swiss president, Hans Rudolf Merz, is requesting that the U.S. drop its ongoing legal case against UBS, Switzerland's largest bank. U.S. tax officials are hoping to force UBS to hand over the names of over 50,000 possible tax dodgers. The move would be illegal under current Swiss law. Merz said the high-profile investigation could derail his efforts to gain approval of the new treaty in Parliament. Switzerland agreed to sign up to new standards for sharing tax information just before this month's G20 summit. It was that or land on a blacklist of tax havens. It's been estimated that offshore accounts cost the U.S. about $100 billion in taxes every year. In London, I'm Christopher Worth for Marketplace.
They're calling today Equal Pay Day. Lobbyists for equal pay laws say the typical American woman has to work 3 months longer than her male counterpart to make what he makes in a year. But it seems the fallout from the economic crisis could be chipping away at that pay gap now. Here's Jill Barchet.
Women might fret about being paid less than men, but in this recession, men might be worried about having a job at all. Heather Boucher is a labor economist at the Center for American Progress, a left-leaning think tank. She says men have been hit with 4 out of every 5 job cuts in this recession. Going forward, women may not seem so underpaid in comparison.
If the men who've been losing their jobs tend to be paid a little bit higher than the average male, then what we might see is that the pay gap gets a little bit smaller because so many of those higher paid men are out of work right now.
She says the gap between men and women's pay may narrow. This doesn't mean that a working woman is better off.
When you're looking at families where a man has lost his job and she is trying to make ends meet on her salary alone, not just her, but her whole family is suffering because her pay is lower simply because she's a woman.
Women's pay has been stuck for years at about 78 cents for every dollar that a man earns. Congress is scheduled to hold a hearing on the gender pay gap later this morning. I'm Jill Barchet for Marketplace.
President Obama met with credit card companies last week at the White House. A bill that would better protect credit card holders is making its way through Congress, and consumer advocates are pushing legislation at the state and at the federal level. They want to crack down on another source of debt, payday loans. From the Marketplace Entrepreneurship Desk at Oregon Public Broadcasting, here's Mitchell Hartman.
Kathy Kimpton is a registered nurse with a steady job. I met her outside a Rapid Cash store on the outskirts of Portland. She just paid off her husband's latest payday loan.
$300, but I know I paid nearly $40 for that $300 loan.
If you've never taken out a payday loan, here's how it works. Say you want to borrow $300. You write a personal check for that amount, plus perhaps an interest payment of 15%. That's the extra $40 Kathy Kimpton was talking about. You post-date the check a few weeks to your next paycheck. If you don't come in and pay the debt, the lender simply cashes the original check. Now, 15% interest over a few weeks may not sound bad, but it works out to several 100% annually. Adair Morse at the University of Chicago Business School says there aren't many options for borrowers in trouble.
People go to pawn shops, and car title loans and things like this, but these all require some assets that you're willing to put up as collateral. It's pretty much after you get capped off on your credit cards, you really don't have much choice but to go to a payday lender.
The demand for this type of credit is undeniable right now.
Lindsay Metzger is a spokesperson for the Payday Lenders Trade Association.
You know, anecdotally, we're hearing from companies that there are more people walking through the door, there are more people calling, but that's not translating into additional money being advanced, mainly because part of the requirement is that you have proof of steady income. So as people lose their jobs, they no longer qualify for the advance.
Lenders I talk to say defaults are up significantly, borrowers bouncing checks or skipping out, so profits are falling. More than a dozen states, meanwhile, have capped annual interest around 36%. Lenders say default rates are so high, anything less than triple digits puts them out of business. Uriah King of the Center for Responsible Lending isn't shedding any tears.
Somebody that's paycheck to paycheck can't pay off a 400% interest rate loan, plus pay off all their expenses. The payday loan just drives them deeper into the hole.
But finance professor Adair Morse says her research shows most borrowers do understand how much interest they're paying and don't mind. They like the convenience. Better, she says, to limit how much of a paycheck someone can borrow against and how many times they can roll the loan over and pile on more interest. That might keep people from slipping into a spiral of debt they can never repay. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
Once again, Wall Street, the Dow down about 0.6%. The latest at Marketplace.org in Los Angeles. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Have a great day.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.